With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Over at BangTheBook.com, we got a lot of great insights and analysis as well. My situational betting articles up for the NBA, NHL, and college basketball. Of course, as we know, the NBA doesn't return here until Thursday. But I've got that article up for you already, so you can start going through and circling some of those spots. My MLB stuff will be coming out here this week. Probably going to start posting the MLB team previews on Wednesday. I'm hoping to have the guide out either Thursday or Friday in its entirety. And keep in mind that that will include season win total write-ups for all 30 teams, division, pennant, and World Series futures odds, individual player stuff like MVP, Cy Young, Home Run King, stuff like that. Now, I am doing the guide about a maybe 2 or 3 weeks earlier here, I think, than what I had it out last year. So maybe not all of this stuff will be out, but I'll have everything out there that I possibly can in this year's MLB betting guide. So that'll be starting to unroll over at bangthebook.com on Wednesday. The full PDF guide probably going to be Thursday or Friday. We should be getting that up on Amazon in the not too distant future after I get that PDF posted. But we will have a link to that over at bangthebook.com as well. So very much looking forward to the Major League Baseball season. Spring training games start here on Saturday, so it's definitely time to start thinking about the Major League Baseball betting market. And obviously, we've been doing that a lot here already on Bang the Book Radio. As far as the other markets go, we got tennis previews from Big Ten Watto for the events here in Rio, Marseille, and Delray Beach. We'll have a WGC Mexico preview from James Mazzola for this week's PGA Tour event. We'll also talk about that on Tuesday's show with Brian Blessing. We'll have NASCAR previews for this weekend's set of races out there in Las Vegas. We'll have a UFC Fight Night preview for this week, for this upcoming weekend's card. We've got new updated NBA power ratings from Noops. We got a ton of stuff going on over at the website. Please make sure you head on over there and check it all out. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. All right, so with that, let's get down to some Major League Baseball stuff here for this Monday edition of the show. Before I get too far, had a lot of people reach out over the last few days to get on the mailing list for the notes for the Bettors Box segments. Now, again, like I said, once I get into the season, and really I've already been doing this, but there are a lot of metrics. There are a lot of things that I talk about with a lot of numbers. And obviously a lot of you probably listen in the car or while you're working out or something like that. So I want to make it easy for you and provide these notes for the segments and for the standalone Bettors Box podcasts, which will begin here the last week of March with that Thursday edition on opening day. I could have one the Thursday before that, but of course we got March Madness and all that stuff going on. In any event, you can get on the mailing list for the Bettors Box notes. It is very simple. You email me, Adam at bangthebook.com. Okay, that's Adam at bangthebook.com. So you email me, that will get you on the list for the show notes. What I'm probably going to do here, since it is still the off season, I'm probably going to group Thursday and Monday together. So you'll get an email on Mondays with the notes from the previous two segments. Got about 250 people on that mailing list now. So very happy to have that coming out here for you. So definitely get on the mailing list for the notes, adam@bangthebook.com. That's the best way to get on the list for the notes and also send me questions. I will be doing a Monday mailbag segment probably here pretty soon, to be totally honest with you, where we can talk Major League Baseball, college basketball, any other market. But I will do a Monday mailbag every Monday during the shows for the Bettors Box. So again, adam@bangthebook.com to get on the list for the notes here. So I've been talking a lot about team regression here in the lead up to the season, in the lead up to my season win total guide. But we've got to talk about some player regression, individual player regression, because my win total assessments include individual player evaluation, specifically from the key guys, the guys that are expected to shoulder a lot of the load for their respective teams. I want to find positive and negative regression candidates. That is part of my season-long handicapping process, obviously part of my game-by-game handicapping process as well. But the goal here is to use the aggregate of regression plus the other factors that are out there, the strength of the division, the transactions that teams completed over the offseason, the transactions that other teams around them completed during the offseason, and then come to a win total conclusion. So it's a whole long extended process for me where I look at a lot of different factors, a lot of different things. One of the things that I look at is individual player evaluations. And with that, I look for guys that should be better, guys that could be worse, and factor that into the overall picture for these teams. Now, again, like I mentioned, I'm very metrics heavy, very analytics heavy, very sabermetrics heavy. So I want to talk about FIP, which is fielding independent pitching. This is a hallmark of my handicapping, a hallmark of my pitcher evaluations here. What FIP means, fielding independent pitching, is that it comes up with a run estimator, basically an ERA estimator, using the things that a pitcher can quote unquote control: strikeouts, walks, home runs, and hit by pitches. So those are the four components of FIP. Again, fielding independent pitching: strikeouts, walks, home runs, and hit by pitches. Now there's an additional layer to this called XFIP, lowercase x, F-I-P. That's strikeouts, walks, and hit by pitches, but it's home runs regressed to a league average home run to fly ball percentage. Now, remember that last year, we saw a massive spike in home runs. There's been a lot of talk about the baseball, about the characteristics of the baseball, and why power spiked as much as it did last season. So something I went and looked up here, I went and looked up home run to fly ball percentages, the percentage of fly balls that become home runs by season dating back to 2002. From 2002 to 2014, the highest home run per fly ball percentage was 11.2%. In 2015, it was 11.4%. In 2016, 12.8%. And we started to see hitters focusing more on launch angle, teams trying to figure out how to generate more power. And they started telling guys, you know, kind of swing up at the baseball a little bit, hit the bottom of the ball, get it in the air, it's going to carry. And there were some guys that had a career renaissance because they changed the launch angles of their swings. So in 2017, it was 13.7% with home runs to fly balls, 12.7% in 2018. And remember, the talk after 2017 was, oh my God, there are too many home runs, we need to change the baseball. What happened in 2019? A home run per fly ball percentage of 15.3%. That was easily the highest all time. So again, that was the league average of home run per fly ball percentage, 15.3%. Now, let's think about something here. There are a lot of guys around Major League Baseball that simply are not going to allow 15.3% of their fly balls to be home runs. But XFIP, if you remember, is FIP regressed to a league average home run per fly ball percentage. So you look at a guy like Zach Davies, for example, now with the San Diego Padres, traded from the Milwaukee Brewers. Zach Davies had a 3.55 ERA with a 456 FIP and a 520 XFIP. Now, as a general rule, at least in the past, if you had a guy with a low ERA and a high FIP and a high XFIP, the expectation was for ERA regression. So that would mean, of course, giving up more runs. Giving up more runs, well, that's bad. So you would see a lot of line movements come in against guys with a low ERA, a high FIP, and a high XFIP. Now, this will probably be the case again this year because it's a very basic tenet of handicapping from a sabermetric standpoint. But why did Zach Davies have a low ERA, a high FIP, and a very high XFIP at 520? Well, remember the four components of FIP: strikeouts, walks, home runs, and hit by pitches. Well, Zach Davies is a pitch-to-contact guy with a low strikeout rate. His walk rate is about league average, but his home run per fly ball percentage last year was 11%. That's well below the league average of 15.3%. So you've got a pitcher with a low strikeout rate, a nothing special walk rate, and a low home run to fly ball percentage. He pitches to a lot of weak contact. He stays off the barrel. He's got very good command. So Zach Davies, with a very good defensive team like the Milwaukee Brewers, able to post a low ERA. But because he didn't grade as well in the strikeout department, one of the four components of fielding independent pitching, he had a 456 FIP. Because his home run to fly ball percentage was over 4% lower than the league average, XFIP accounts for that and factors in the low strikeout rate. So he had a 520 XFIP. So on the surface, Zach Davies looks like a big regression candidate. And I think to a degree, he will regress this season. I would expect his ERA to probably be up in the 390 or 4.00 range with a lesser defensive team in the San Diego Padres. And also just, you know, with a park factor change, an organization change, stuff like that. Now, Miller Park does grade better than Petco Park, but still, Zach Davies is a guy that probably ran a little bit better than he should have last season. Here's another example. Marco Gonzalez of the Seattle Mariners, a 399 ERA, a 415 FIP, and a 511 XFIP. Now, Gonzalez also didn't grade well from a strikeout standpoint. A low strikeout rate, pitches to contact, but this is a guy that will never post a 15% home run per fly ball percentage. Last year, it was 9.3. So you throw XFIP out of the equation for him. Now, some people will say you can't do that. I disagree with that. The people that take a very hard-lined sabermetric stance will say that you have to respect the XFIP here, but I don't think that you do. I look at a guy like Gonzalez with a 399 ERA and a 415 FIP and say, okay, that's probably about where he's going to be for the upcoming season. So when I go through my season win total analysis of the Seattle Mariners, I'm going to look at Marco Gonzalez and say, okay, he's probably a 4.00 ERA pitcher again this season. So he's not going to be any better or any worse. So I factor that into the full team profile, and then I kind of come together with some of my conclusions. Keep in mind that FIP and XFIP will be almost never keen on pitch-to-contact guys because in theory, they are defense-dependent. And a lot of ERA is dependent on defense and luck. It's dependent on sequencing. If you'll recall when I talked about base runs, where strikeout, strikeout, single, single, home run, strikeout is three runs, and home run, single, single, strikeout, strikeout, strikeout is one run, keep in mind what that does to an ERA. You give up the same six outcomes in an inning, but you gave up three runs in one case and one run in another. So ERA is very largely dependent on defense and batted ball luck and sequencing. FIP and XFIP are not. Those are based on things that a pitcher can control. So that's why if you get a low ERA guy with a higher FIP and a higher XFIP, people look for regression. And I think Zach Davies will be something of a regression candidate, but not to the point where he posts a 450 ERA or anything like that. Where this is probably a lot easier to understand is with positive regression candidates. Let's look at a couple of the most obvious ones from last season, beginning with Chris Sale. Chris Sale had a 4.40 ERA last season, but he had a 3.39 FIP and a 2.93 XFIP. If you've got a high ERA with a low FIP and a low XFIP, you got unlucky. For Chris Sale last season, he had a 19.5% home run per fly ball percentage. That was well above the league average. That was more than 4% above the league average for a guy that typically falls right around league average. So Chris Sale got unlucky last year, and that hurt his ERA. He still had the elite strikeout rate and a very good walk rate, gave up some home runs along the way, but still had that 3.39 FIP. If you've got a guy whose ERA was a full run higher than his FIP, he is a very obvious positive regression candidate. Chris Sale, health permitting, will be a lot better this year than he was last year. One that may fly under the radar a little bit more here is Kyle Gibson. Kyle Gibson, formerly of the Twins, now of the Texas Rangers, he had a 4.84 ERA with a 4.26 FIP and a 3.80 XFIP. Now, Kyle Gibson last season had a 20.4% home run per fly ball percentage. He's got a career home run per fly ball percentage of 14.1%. So he is a guy that very much was hurt by the juiced baseball last season. So you get a 4.84 ERA with a 4.26 FIP. Now, Gibson does go down to Texas, but they're going to a venue change where it's going to be more of a climate-controlled environment. It should play a little bit closer to neutral than the previous park used to. So I look at a guy like Kyle Gibson as I go through my win total handicapping process and say, he's going to be better than he was last season. He's going to improve. So if I get enough individual players that are expected to improve, I'm probably going to start looking at an over for that team. Now, on the flip side, obviously, if I've got several players I think will decrease in production or face negative regression, then I look for reasons to bet the under. Again, keep in mind, ERA is very defense dependent. It is dependent on sequencing. It is dependent on something like left on base percentage, where if you don't get out of innings with two outs and you give up runs, that's going to hurt your ERA. On the flip side, if you get out of innings very well, you strand a lot of runners, that's going to tremendously help your ERA. So ERA is a statistic very subject to variance, whereas FIP and XFIP, less so, because they're technically things that a pitcher can control, which is why a lot of people do believe FIP and XFIP to be very important statistics here, along with things like Sierra, along with things like DRA, deserved run average, stuff like that. I'll talk about those metrics a little bit more as we go throughout the season here. But just for you to start looking at an individual player level, go to FanGraphs, okay? Look at pitchers with a high ERA and a lower FIP and a lower XFIP, and then look at the reasons why. Did they allow a lot of home runs? Did they have a low left on base percentage? Did they have a high batting average on balls in play? You know, in the previous examples here, Chris Sale last season with his 4.40 ERA, he had a 66.7% left on base percentage. A guy with his strikeout rate is not going to repeat a 67% left on base percentage. Another reason why he will be better off this season. Same thing with Kyle Gibson. He had a strikeout per inning last year, but a 67.5% left on base percentage. League average for left on base percentage is in the 73 to 74% range. So that's a very easy metric. You go to FanGraphs, you go to the leaders page, you sort by left on base percentage. Keep in mind, league average 73 or 74%. Now, high strikeout guys will generally be better because they're better at stranding runners because they don't worry about balls in play as much. But if you've got a guy that had a good strikeout rate and a low left on base percentage, he is immediately a candidate for positive regression. There are shortcuts to be had here, and these are things that I do take a look at in my season win total write-ups and when I start evaluating these players over the course of the season. Now, this factors into hitters, too. hitters generally look at BABIP, batting average on balls in play. Now, two things to remember about BABIP. Again, batting average on balls in play. Home runs do not count because they are not balls in play. And more ground balls go for hits than fly balls. So one of the things that did hurt Kyle Gibson last season is that his batting average on balls in play was 330 because he was an extreme ground ball guy. Fielders didn't get to it. Maybe he allowed a lot of hard contact on ground balls, stuff like that. But more ground balls go for hits than fly balls. So guys that carry a high ground ball percentage are more likely to have a higher batting average on balls in play. Now, this also can apply to hitters. You look at a couple of guys for the White Sox here, and I talked about this a ton in my White Sox season win total write-up, Yoan Moncada and Tim Anderson. Moncada last season carried a 406 batting average on balls in play. Now, he has very good contact quality metrics. He hits the ball hard. So there is that. You can carry a higher BABIP if you hit the ball hard. There's a very good correlation between exit velocity and hard hit percentage and batting average on balls in play. I mean, it makes sense. Less reaction time for the fielders, higher quality of contact, you're going to have better outcomes in those scenarios. But almost 41% of the balls in play for Moncada went for hits. I don't care how good your contact quality is. That's very, very high. Tim Anderson, better contact quality last season. His average exit velocity went from 85.6 miles per hour in 2018 to 88.3 in 2019, but that's still roughly around league average. But Tim Anderson carried a 399 batting average on balls in play. It was 289 in 2018. It was 328 in 2017. So the exit velocity went up, but the batting average on balls in play was too high, I think, for a player of his skill set. So Tim Anderson wound up having his best offensive season with a 357 on base percentage because of a BABIP that was almost 400. He walks less than 3% of the time. So Tim Anderson is a clear negative regression candidate for me. Same thing with Moncada, although Moncada is probably going to hit for more power this year that will offset the decrease in BABIP. But as I go through and look at these teams, if I start to see multiple guys that I expect to regress offensively in some of these categories that are open to a lot of variance year over year, then I'm going to start looking towards an under. So I guess this is good information from a fantasy perspective. I think it's good information from a season win total and an individual betting perspective as well. And again, over the course of a full season, you're more likely to see regression. The larger the sample size, the more expectation you have of things happening close to the mean, or things kind of coming back down to earth a little bit, or possibly going up if that's the case. So that's why I think I'm very good at the season win total market, because again, with my regression analysis handicapping over the course of a season, it's very likely to happen. Trying to pinpoint when it will happen in an individual game, well, that's a little bit more difficult. So I'll try to isolate some more of these individual regression candidates as the season gets closer. But for those that subscribe to the notes, again, adam@bangthebook.com, adam@bangthebook.com via email. I did some videos over on our YouTube page about a year and a half ago or so now, using FanGraphs to handicap baseball, using Baseball Savant to handicap baseball, which is where all of the StatCast data is regarding things like exit velocity, hard hit percentage, stuff like that. If you subscribe to the notes, again, email me, adam@bangthebook.com. The links to those videos are in today's Bettors Box notes. So you don't have to go and dig it up on YouTube. The links to the videos are in today's Bettors Box notes for using FanGraphs to handicap baseball and using Baseball Savant to handicap baseball. So those links are available here in the Bettors Box notes page. The Baseball Savant page has changed its format a little bit, but the value of the content and the analysis and evaluation remains the same there. So again, like I said, I hit on a lot of metrics in these segments. I talk about all of these concepts in my season win total betting guide and also in my daily picks article over at bangthebook.com, which will start here on March 26th with opening day. So Hopefully this isn't too hard for you to follow along with. But again, that's why you can subscribe to the notes or maybe listen back through the segments a couple of different times. But again, a quick Cliff Notes version here with pitchers. You want to look for positive or negative regression on a surface level basis. Compare the ERA to the FIP and to the XFIP and look at left on base percentage. And look at left on base percentage relative to strikeout rate. If you have a low strikeout rate, it is harder to strand runners. If you have a high strikeout rate, it should be easier to strand runners. If you've got a high strikeout rate and a poor left on base percentage the previous year, that's a guy in line for positive regression from an ERA standpoint. So if you take anything out of this segment here today, that's what I want you to take out of it. And that's how I use the metrics to handicap baseball, both on a game-by-game level and on a full season level. We got a handful of injury notes and updates here from spring training to get to. We'll start with Mike Clevinger of my beloved Cleveland Indians. He's got a torn meniscus, just had surgery to repair that on Thursday, or Friday, whatever day it was. He's likely out until early May at the earliest. Now, this is a notable loss for the Indians, and we'll see how fast he gets back. He got back quicker than expected from that back strain injury last season. So maybe he's just a fast healer, but this is a big loss for an Indians team with a limited margin for error. They are very top heavy with four elite players. Clevinger is one of them. The others are Shane Bieber, Francisco Lindor, and Jose Ramirez. And there are some people that don't like Shane Bieber all that much for this season because of some of his contact quality metrics against last year. I'll talk more about that in my Indians season win total write-up and as we go forward here with these Bettors Box segments. But now you worry for the Indians about additional injuries. Now, if they only miss three or four starts, well, probably four or five starts from Clevinger, it is what it is. If he has some setbacks and this gets extended to 8 to 10 starts, like I talked about with James Paxton on last week's show, if you've got cluster injuries or suspensions or something like that, that's when you start to worry. So Clevinger in a vacuum doesn't impact me a whole lot for the Indians. But if Shane Bieber gets hurt, if Carlos Carrasco has any more leukemia setbacks or just doesn't have a lot of strength in spring training, that's when it starts to worry me. So one injury, not that big of a deal. Multiple injuries, that becomes a much bigger deal. Cole Hamels won't throw for a few weeks here for the Braves. Like I mentioned last week, the Braves have a ton of pitching depth. They'll be fine. Don't let the name recognition be too much of cause for concern. Now, that being said, I saw that Felix Hernandez could be an option for Hamels, a spot in the rotation. That's a big downgrade, in my opinion, to the other depth guys that they have, the other prospects that they have. So that is one that I am worried about a little bit because I think, as good as Mike Clevinger is, over four or five starts, you can potentially replace that. But if you've got a Cole Hamels situation where he may miss 10 to 12 starts, something like that, that's where you start to worry a little bit more. Because again, I mean, keep in mind, with five games, you're talking about a very small percentage of the season. With five starts, you're talking about 3% of the season. So you start talking about 6% of the season with 10 starts. You start going up from there. So, those are things that can affect the bullpen too. Maybe you got a replacement pitcher that doesn't throw the same amount of innings, something like that. Those are things that can start to hurt as you get more of those cluster injuries, but a one-off thing doesn't concern me a whole lot. Eugenio Suarez is progressing nicely for the Reds. Lots of people, myself included, very high on the Reds here. Don't just watch for new injuries though. Watch for setbacks. Watch for guys coming back from things because Suarez last year hit 49 home runs for a team that did not have a whole lot of power. Now he's coming off of shoulder surgery, kind of a freak injury. Shoulder issues can zap power. This is a concern for me for the Reds here. I do like them overall. I love their rotation. I love the additions that they've made. Nick Castellanos will fill some of that power void, but Suarez hit for a lot of power, and he's coming off of major shoulder surgery now to clean up some cartilage. That can take away some power. So that does lower my projection a little bit for the Reds offense, at least at the outset of the season. Mentioned Chris Sale last year. He had some elbow issues, had some command problems. He feels good after having a plate platelet-rich plasma injection late last season. Watch for setbacks here because the Red Sox traded away David Price. They don't have a whole lot behind Eduardo Rodriguez and Chris Sale. And, of course, they took Eduardo Rodriguez to arbitration over $600,000, won that case. Not real great optics here so far for the Red Sox going into the season. But watch for setbacks with guys that are coming off of injuries. Miles Mikolas also had one of those PRP injections last year, but he's already had a setback, had an MRI. MRI came back okay, but the Cardinals are a team that most people don't like anyway. Now you get the Mikolas injury in there. You start to worry about that a little bit. An intercostal muscle strain for Ty Buttrey of the Los Angeles Angels. Now remember that these are injuries that are worse for starting pitchers because they may miss 3 to 4 weeks of, or 2 to 3 weeks of not being able to throw. Something like that pushes their timelines back because they have to ramp up to 80 pitchers or so. For relievers, it's a little bit easier. They're more flexible with their timelines. So for right now, Buttrey may miss opening day, but we'll be back shortly after that. But for relievers, those things are a lot easier to deal with. Ryan Borucki of the Toronto Blue Jays shut down again. He had elbow problems last year, had a nice 2018, but couldn't follow it up in 2019 with some elbow injuries. The Blue Jays added to their rotation, but depth is a concern for me. And Borucki being shut down definitely hurts them here early on in the process. Finally, one more, and that's Mitch Haniger. Mitch Haniger with another surgical process, another surgical procedure, I should say. He's probably out into June at the earliest now. Probably more like the All-Star break would be a reasonable time frame for him. I already like the Mariners under. I hate news like this for both the player and also for the odds, which are likely to drop, in particular because Haniger, one of the biggest names on a bad Mariners team, but that's one that obviously does hurt them quite a bit. I already like their under anyway, but again, we're going to see a lot of these injury situations popping up as we go throughout spring training. So follow along with those every Monday and Thursday here on the Bettors Box. Keep in mind here, once we get into the month of March, maybe shelving the Bettors Box a little bit to accommodate for just doing shows on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. First full week of March will be a regular set of shows. After that, with conference tournaments, with March Madness, the big first 4 days of the tournament, won't be doing the full Monday through Friday shows, just Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, those 2 weeks in the middle of March. But I will be doing the Bettors Box as much as I possibly can. Get on the list for notes, adam@bangthebook.com. We will have you fully prepared for the upcoming 2020 Major League Baseball season.